Welcome to The Practical Intuitive, where each Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern, where host Robin Fritz explores mind, body, and spirit for the real world. Because we are all intuitives and healers, and we must all learn to love ourselves and live that love every day. Robin is a trained and certified intuitive and spiritual consultant and hypnotherapist with an international practice based in Seattle, Washington. As the practical intuitive, she covers personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice. It's all here. Readings, healings, and funny, warm, thought-provoking conversations. It's Robin Fritz, the practical intuitive, helping you mastermind body and spirit for the real world. No ifs, ands, buts, or BS ever.
Welcome to the Practical Intuitive Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World. It's Robin Fritz, and today we are going to talk about how to intuitively create a garden. And this doesn't mean you have to go out and spread trees and flowers around 60 acres of land. You can do it with one plant in your house, garden on your deck like I do, 3 by 2 foot space on my deck. Or you can get involved in larger projects. I have dear friends who are master gardeners here in Seattle, which means they've taken extensive courses in how to identify and take care of plants. But today we're going to talk about how our intuition works, what that means in connecting with our gardens, mind, body, and spirit, how to create a garden at home, at work, why you would want to, and I'm going to share some really fun stories with you to give you an idea of what you can achieve on your own in your garden. So you are welcome to call in and share an experience or want to chat quickly with your own garden. That number to call is 202-570-7057. Or you can email me at my website, robinfritz.com. That's RobinFritz.com. You can email me with questions, comments, and every once in a while I put a show together where I just deal with questions and quick readings. So before we dig deep into the issue of gardens, I want to get us all grounded and balanced in this space here with Fallon, the Citrine Lemurian Quartz, my crystal partner. So imagine that, and Fallon is in the shape of a crystal ball, kind of a yellowish, pale yellowish cast to his clear crystal. And I'd like you to take your attention to the top of your head and think about bringing mind, body, and spirit together. All of us together here in this hour, whether you're listening live or in the archives. And as you breathe down from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet, just let go of the cares of the day and relax in the space with us. Breathing down from the top of your head, down your face, your shoulders, your chest, your hips, your knees, and your feet. The top of your head to the bottom of your feet. And breathing back up again from your feet, past your knees, your hips, your chest, your shoulders, your face, and the top of your head, your crown chakra, tends to be wide open, connecting with Fallon, and oftentimes connecting with your own spiritual team. And so today, we are going to talk about intuitively creating a garden. So how do you cooperate with nature beings? How can they support you? How can you support them? And how do we learn to respect and collaborate with nature? What does this mean for neighborhoods, for cities, for national parks and wild spaces, for the planet itself? And I'm going to share some stories here, but I want to start by saying that I really didn't do any gardening growing up, and I mostly lived in apartments and condos, so I never had a yard space like a lot of people do. But I've had a lot of houseplants over my life, and especially when I lived in Michigan, I had 80, 90 plants, everywhere, everything from ferns to miniature roses. Even I grew a plumeria, which is a Hawaiian tree, a beautiful smelling flower, to an 8-foot-tall tree from a seed that I bought in Hawaii. So I've really been interested in plants and gardening. And then here in my condominium complex in Seattle, Washington, some years ago, I took over management of our grounds. It was just a terrible mess. I mean, overgrown, things were dying. It needed a complete overhaul. And I was like, what does this mean and how am I going to go about it? And one of the first things that I discovered, and I think we all need to pay attention to, is really, and I don't mean to insult anyone, including myself, but I sometimes think the most destructive people on the planet are gardeners. And I know we don't mean to be, but when you look at lawns, for example, a huge thing all over the United States for sure, but other countries as well. The toxins that go into creating lawns, the level of pollutants, really the most serious pollutant out there that is like a natural thing, a lawn. And then the pesticides that we pour on top of things, the herbicides, all of the things that we do to create easier lives for ourselves. The question is, what is it really doing to us and to the planet around us? Now, I live close to the ocean in Seattle, so it's even more important for people here to pay attention to what we use on our gardens, even to washing our cars and letting the residue and the soap that we use drain down into the city drainage system and out into Puget Sound, where it interferes with sea life as well as our life. And the question is, what do we think about that, and how do we deal with that, and what does that actually mean to us? And a couple of things that we want to look at, and I'll touch back into at the end of the show. We become really knowledgeable when we think about things like climate change, if it's real or not, what's going on, how the planet evolves over time, and there are times when it's warmer, times when it's cooler, times when it's rainier, times when it's drier. And how do we cooperate with a planet that's in flux? It's alive, it's got a soul like everything else, it's evolving like we are, and changes happen over time. And a lot of people out there looking at grass alternatives, eco lawns, they call it, which I tried to get here and couldn't get support for. Really, that tend to grow seasonally. So the lawns offer different things in different times of the year, but not that perfect green, almost artificial looking grass that we spend so much time and so many chemicals on. The other thing is water use. We have all become very conscious of how much water we're using, or we should be, and that includes the water that we're using on our gardens and the land around us. And I know there are many places, the entire west coast of the United States has suffered badly from drought these previous years. Already in Washington State this year, in a what people laughingly call a traditionally damp climate on the West Coast or the Western Washington, we're already entering a drought for the year, already officially dry. We had the second driest March in history. The Olympic Mountains west of me are almost empty already. And they're talking about a warmer and drier spring. What does that mean? Forest fires coming up, wildfires. The last 2 years, so heavy and so extensive here in Seattle that you couldn't go outside for weeks at a time. So, what are we looking at in cooperating with nature? And one of that is to understand the cycle of life, how things live and die and regenerate. For example, one of my favorite places on the planet is Yellowstone National Park. And I haven't been there in a while. But I love the land, the animals, of course, But the geological features, the seismic features that you don't get to experience in different areas, the mud pots, the geysers, all of that, that indicates how active our planet really is. But there was a, I think it was 1987, was a massive wildfire went through Yellowstone and burned a lot of the trees. But what's interesting to think about is that the Park Service does not interfere with what happens in the park. And so the wildfires burned, but what happened was that's also the natural process of restarting something. And so the trees that burned, their pine cones popped open, and now huge areas of Yellowstone are reseeded and have pine trees growing where they weren't growing before. And if you drive across certain parts of Yellowstone, you'll see a sign that says, "This area naturally reseeded by wildfire, 1987," reminding us that the planet can and does go on without us. So the question is, how do we cooperate with it? So when I took over the garden, I became very interested in exactly how the cycle of nature worked. We don't get a lot of snow here in Seattle, so if you're familiar at all with our weather this year, we had record snowfall in February, 20 inches of snow. Most of us are just preferring to think that February didn't happen here because of the snow. But now spring is coming and you're looking at it, and I was looking at creating a garden years ago, and it went on for a very long period of time. But that was also a period where I was waking up and realizing that it wasn't just humans or animals or even trees that were alive, that there were lots of other things out there that we just don't pay attention to, and became aware that everything was alive, everything had a purpose, a job to do, a responsibility to do that job, and a choice about doing that job. And so becoming aware of that made it even more intriguing to figure out how to work with a garden and figure out what that meant for our particular building here. So, you know, of course, when you're working with your intuition at all, you know that you're always working with it. So, the important thing is to understand how it works. Do you see pictures? Do you hear things chat with you? Do you feel their energy? Do you simply know how things, what's going on? And of course, we're a combination of all these particular intuitive abilities, and they'll pop in. So one way you can explore that is to play with nature. And I was playing with the garden and learning to connect with the world around me. And I would go out and I'd have a area that was so overgrown I couldn't tell if it was a weed, what we call a weed, if it was something that had been planted, what it was. And I would reach out and I'd put my hand on what I considered a weed. And I said, "Okay, this whole area here," and I literally drew it in the air. So thinking the ground was looking up at me and the plants looking up at me, and we're connecting. And I said, "Okay, some of you need to go and some of you need to stay. And I'm going to put my hand on you and you can tell me what you want." And literally, I found that I could quickly and rapidly weed, as you would say, an area of the garden, because when I touched it, the plant would, like, "I'm ready to go," and it would come out pretty easily. So if you're out there creating, you know, a gardening service for someone, try actually talking to what is there and what might need to come out, and find that it's willingly cooperating with you. Yes, even weeds. Now, I'm not going to say go put your hand on the blackberry bush because that would not feel good. But what I'm talking about is creating a relationship so that you become aware of what the land and your garden might need from you. I teach this in my intuition classes, and I teach people really, which is my passion, which is using your intuition in a very practical way, you know, helping you do things easier and achieve more during your day, and that is helping you be your best in the world and helping you and the world cooperate together. The more we cooperate, the easier everything is for us. So I took my class outside, and it was winter time, and we'd had a lot of rain, and everything was really wet. And I had them put their hands on the garden, just reach down and put their hands on the dirt, touch a plant, and tell me what they were getting. And one woman, she turned to me, and her face was all screwed up. She was all upset, and she goes, "Well, this doesn't make any sense." Okay, that's either a breakthrough happening or someone just doesn't want to cooperate. So I'm like, okay, so why doesn't it make sense to you? And she goes, well, she goes, we've had all this rain, everything's wet, and yet I'm getting from the garden that it's dry. And I said, well, do you think that could be your intuition talking to you? She goes, but it doesn't make any sense. And I said, okay, dig down deeper. Just dig into the garden. And I handed her a little tool that she could dig into the garden with. And sure enough, she gets down there and she finds that it's bone dry. And I smiled at her and I said, you know, you're really listening to your intuition because it didn't make sense to you that it was dry. And then your next point is to explore and find out why you feel that way. And in fact, it's dry because this is basically landfill from when they built the building, and it's clay, and it's when we were working on the garden, we found pens and concrete and nails, and they just literally didn't clean up the area before they filled it in and dumped a few bunch bushes on it. So that was a lesson in really listening to what a garden or a house plant is trying to tell you and showing you and cooperating with you for its life to be better and yours as a result. I mean, it's always much nicer to have a living house plant than a dead one. So after the break, we're going to talk some more about experiences that I've had and how we can intuitively connect with our gardens. Questions? Call in 202-570-7057.
Conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine. Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, Erinos. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Practical Intuitive Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World. It's Robin Fritz. We're in Seattle, Washington. And today we're talking about how to intuitively create a garden. So, pause. And I want to get back to the Guardians of Alki, Alki Beach, where I live. But first, I want to tell you about the Duwamish clearing. Now, Duwamish is a Native American term from our local Native tribes here. And there's a river that flows into Puget Sound on the other side of West Seattle from me called the Duwamish River. And one time some years ago, long before I started the condominium project, which is one reason why I want to tell you this story, but also for you to see how important it is for you to find your own way to connect with nature around you. So a friend invited me to go on a Port of Seattle cruise up the Duwamish River to see how they were working on clearing the river. Now, the river, over the time that Seattle was settled, it's a shipping port. They had basically all kinds of industrial activities going on there, and it was extremely polluted. It's very toxic site, and they were trying to clean it up over time, and parts of it are clean, and they've created little waterside gardens and walkways for people, and that's what they were trying to show us that day. But as we were sailing into the mouth of the Duwamish River, I saw this like energetic toxic cloud rise up, and I said to my friend, oh my God, brace yourself, shield yourself from this cloud. And it was shocking, and I realized how much more they had to do to clear up that area, but it made me start to think, like, what's that all about? So about the same time, I went to a friend of mine who's a Reiki master and had a healing with her, and she does something called Karuna Reiki, and during the healing, there was a symbol that showed up that she didn't know what it was, and I was like, fine, whatever. And the next morning, I climbed out of bed, and as I climbed out of bed, I just shouted out, I'm claiming my power. And I thought, oh my God, I'm weird. Where did that come from? Well, sure enough, I contacted my friend, and she said, oh, I looked it up, and that Karuna Reiki symbol is a symbol for claiming your power, right? Like, oh my gosh, okay, fine. Well, it made me start thinking again about the Duwamish River and the clearing project. And as I was thinking that, this being showed up. A being showed up and looked at me, and I'm like, okay, who are you? And it gave its name, and like dragon names, like names of hurricanes, all these beings have their own names, and usually in languages we can't even begin to pronounce. So basically, I ended up calling this being the Duwamish Headwaters. It described itself as the headwaters of the Duwamish River. So you get on Google these days, you can find just about anything. And I discovered that the headwaters of the Duwamish River, which is here in Seattle, start up on top of Mount Rainier, which is a couple hundred miles away, but looms over downtown Seattle on every single day, but particularly on the sunny days when you can actually see it looming over us. So that really got me curious. And the Duwamish River, or the headwaters of the Duwamish River, was really asking for human attention, in a sense, a human connection. And it said to me that what we considered the mouth of the Duwamish River, which I thought we had actually sailed into that day on the cruise, was actually the end of it. It drained into Puget Sound there. And that it said that those waters would never be clean until the system itself was reconnected to the headwaters. And I'm like, wait, what? And I had to do some research to figure out what it was talking about. And It involved me going to various places around the state here in the Duwamish River area and Puget Sound area and investigating what it was talking about. And essentially it was this. The headwaters of the Duwamish River, they flow out of Mount Rainier and they flow down into the valleys and eventually they end up in Lake Washington and Puget Sound. And over time, things happened in the waterways that caused those waters to be diverted. Human and natural events. So the humans would dam up the river and that sort of thing, and that kept the water from flowing naturally. But the other things that occurred were like earthquakes, major storms that diverted the river direction in one way or the other. And the problem was that over the centuries, humans have forgotten our job to witness what happens in nature, to simply witness it and to celebrate it. So what the Duwamish headwaters was telling me was that they wanted people to literally go to those places that had been disrupted either by humans or by natural events and simply witness that that had occurred. And that witnessing would help recreate the energetic ties to the headwaters of the Duwamish up at Mount Rainier, and eventually the energetic ties would help with the cleanup that we're trying to do in the Duwamish River and in Puget Sound. So I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. So I went, I actually have a picture on my website of where the river directed me to, which is in a park in Renton, Washington, which is a little south of Seattle. And there were the Duwamish River, where the central area that had been blocked up in that was right there in that spot. So I took some people along. We witnessed, basically, they wanted us to party. So we had lunch and we, you know, kind of danced around and we said hello and we, you know, offered energy healing with, in cooperation with the waters. And that's what we have not been doing for centuries. But our ancestors knew how to do that. So our ancestors in any part of the world would witness a what we call a tragedy or a major disruption in the environment by simply going to that spot, acknowledging it, and celebrating it. And that, as you think about it, the celebration and the acknowledgement gets energy flowing again, right? The blockage that happened gets naturally removed through energy clearing in that process of witnessing. So that's what humans are supposed to do, witness. Seems pretty simple, right? And that's what we've continued to do over time. So the clearing spot was a place where an ecological disaster occurred, and it was polluted and it needed to go back to the source. So this was a high-level energetic clearing, but it was also a very basic level of clearing that humans haven't been participating in over time. Eventually, I'm going to get around to talking to our native populations about this, but I think they're in tune with this itself. Now, if you think that's strange, think about what you know, if you know anything, about Tellington T-Touch, which is a method of energy healing, essentially, created by a woman, but her name was Tellington, but I forget her first name. And she created this process of T-touch, or kind of a form of acupressure, working with animals to help them with physical or emotional issues. And one of the things that she did with her practitioners was teach them to work on the energy body of missing tails like spaniels. Now, I live with Cavalier King Charles Spaniels because they're delightful dogs, but also because they get to keep their tails. They don't get cut off like others or other spaniel breeds, which is illegal now in Europe and should be here. But when you crop a dog's tail or you crop their ears, the physical tail is gone, but the etheric tail is still there. And they discovered through Tellington T-Touch that extending your energy work out to the area where the missing tail would have been if it was there physically helped improve the dog's health, right? So if we were doing that with our our human associates who have lost limbs through war or accident, working on the energetic element of the body that's no longer there. And that's basically what the Duwamish River was asking us to do, to help work on the energetic equivalent of the blockage and of the piece of the river that wasn't there anymore, or the part that had been dammed up, and witnessing the action of the of nature around it to clear up the energetic block and, you know, continue forward. Because, you know, the earth doesn't stay the same all the time. You have all kinds of weather systems, earthquakes, all things build on it. So fascinating, right? So what is the etheric equivalent of what is in your garden now, or in your home space? What's the energetic equivalent of that? Did it get cut off somehow? And how can you reconnect that, supporting it to reconnect itself? Because we're not in charge of it. We're witnessing and we're supporting, right? And how does that make you feel when you're done? I mean, it's a form of space clearing. It's a form of clearing the space around you, of helping the space to clear itself, and of, in working with the garden, helping these beings to be and complete in themselves, to fulfill their sole purpose of being a lavender plant or whatever it is in the garden and surviving that. Pretty fascinating, right? And I learned that from the Duwamish headwaters. So back to the guardians of Alki. So with all of that in my head, I was committed to taking over and fixing our messed up gardens here in our building. And I'm not quite sure what that meant, but I was sure willing to do it. At the time I had two cavaliers and a cat. And one day I was closing up the house early. It was still light enough to see outside. And as I, in the back area where my office and bedroom are, is wild space. It, because it's basically the end of a hillside, and it's too steep to build anything on, and we've left it wild, and the neighbors have left it wild, and so it's basically untouched. So I'm looking out there, and I see these beings milling around in this wild space, and I'm like, what the heck? None of them were like anything I'd ever seen before. Tall, one looked like a big tree with arms and legs and eyes. Others, I can't even begin to describe what they looked like, but they were clearly not human or not anything I'd seen outside of maybe a crazy dream or some sort of weird fantasy movie. And I'm looking at them and I'm like, what the heck? And I literally pulled the blinds and walked away, you know, saying, oh my gosh, I need drugs. This is crazy. I've gone crazy. And then I stopped and I just couldn't help myself. I was like, what did I see? So I went back and I raised the curtain, and they're all out there. They're sitting around. They're passing food back and forth. They're basically having a party, and they started waving at me like, there she is. Hi, hi. And I'm like, oh my God. So I'm waving back to them. One of them was a very tiny, very shy creature that looked like a cross between an armadillo and a bush. Like it had a little green bush growing out of its back. So I started talking with them. And I didn't always see them physically like that. I think that was like, hello, this is our introduction. It takes a lot of energy to manifest physically. I don't know, but maybe I didn't want to. But anyway, they were there and they were around and I was talking to them. And I'd sit on my deck and I'd look at the other gardens in the neighborhood, and they would comment on the gardens, what worked in those gardens and what didn't work in those gardens and why. I mean, I was literally getting an education from these weird beings that I didn't know what to call. And because I wasn't polite enough at the time, or conscious enough, or out of my human were in charge consciousness enough, it didn't occur to me to ask them what their names were or who they were. Instead, I called them the Guardians of Alki, Alki Beach being where I lived. And they helped direct how I created the garden and what went into the garden. And I, of course, brought in gardeners to do that work. And it was fascinating. I mean, we had a rhododendron bush that would not come out, and it was in a very bad spot where it was scrawny and dying. It was in a place where it was dry and getting too much heat, and rhododendrons basically grow in forests under the tree canopies. They're not supposed to get a lot of sun, and the gardener could not get the rhododendron out. That's how hard the ground was. And I finally looked at the rhododendron and I said, okay, you got a choice here. You can stay in the ground and die, or you can come out and go with the gardeners to a different garden where you'll be in a proper environment and you can continue to grow. And I gave it a second, and then I pointed my finger at it and said, out. And it literally just popped out of the ground. The gardener shoved the shovel down, and you could hear this mighty crack, and the rhododendron popped out of the ground. Also, the gardener quit because that was pretty freaky. And I had to find a new gardener. But it was a lesson in cooperating with nature, right? And a lesson in us cooperating with nature. So as time dragged out and we were trying to figure out what to put in the garden and how and why and where to put it and all of that, the summer and the fall went by, and it's now November. And the rainy season is supposed to be coming as well as the cold season, and yet we're trying to plant a garden. And finally, we got the garden in, and then I started to worry. Like, we planted all these things, and some things you plant at that time of year, and others you wait. And I'll tell you the rest of the story after the break, and what it means to you, and what you can do with your gardens when we come back. Hang on.
Conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com, M-E-T-T-A, mindfulnessmusic.com.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Practical Intuitive Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World. It's Robin Fritz, and today we're talking about how to intuitively connect with your garden. So, okay, I'm talking about the Guardians of Alki and how this relates to you and working with your garden, even if you have one little houseplant in your house, or like I do, a gigantic 55-plus-year-old jade tree and a whole bunch of lavender, dried lavender, because I have a cat who eats everything else. So, I'm looking at these beans. They're talking to me. They made it very clear to me that once I get the garden built, they're going to move into the garden, and they're going to just be absorbed into the garden. Their energy and who they are, that's just what they do. They just become part of the garden. So I'm like, okay. Well, it was getting hard to getting late in the season, and I was just behind trying to get through all the things that you have to do to put a garden in from scratch when you didn't know heck about what you were doing. So I was really worried and knowing they wanted to go in the garden, and I said, okay, I'm doing my best to get this garden ready for you, but if some of you are anxious and you don't want to wait for that, you're welcome to come in and actually live in our home with me and my dogs and cat. And stay here. You'll be safe. We won't pester or bother. You can stay here until the garden's ready. As long as you ask my kids if it's okay with them, then you can come in. So one of them did come in. The little armadillo one with a little bush on its back kind of surprised me, because it was the shyest and most retiring. And yet it was there in the house. And we would see it, and it would peek out from behind a chair. And I'd go like, I can see you. And the kids were fine with it. They didn't care. And at some point, we got the garden put together, and they went into the garden, and I did some reading, and all of a sudden, I figured out who the Guardians of Alki were. And they're known as fairies. I know, you all saw this coming, right? I didn't have a clue. And fairies kind of had a bad reputation, you know, and I was like, what's that all about? I honestly didn't know what a fairy was, but I knew they kind of had a bad reputation, and I was kind of upset about the whole thing, and I thought, well, maybe they should have told me who they were. Why I thought that, I have no idea. So I kind of got mad, and I said, hey, I've been calling you guys Guardians of Alki, and you're really like fairies. Like, why didn't you tell me who you were and what you were? Like, what's the big deal?
Stop.
And they looked at me and very solemnly said, if you knew they called us fairies, would you have invited us into your home? If you knew they called us fairies, would you have invited us into your home? And I was just astonished. They were extremely solemn. And does a name make that much difference? Is it the work? Is it the intent? You know, what a lesson it was for me, not just in creating a garden, but in learning to relate to all of the non-humans, that it is my work on this earth to help introduce to humans, to be their person that can talk about them and explain them and help them talk to us. And I said, No, it wouldn't have made a difference. I would have invited you into my home, because I know and trust your work. What they call you doesn't matter. And that's what changed. That's what changed in that moment. The fact that I found out who they really were according to what humans think. And they revealed their essence to me. And that deepened the friendship. And they went into the garden, and the last part of that story is that there I was looking at the garden. It's November, and I'm worried about, you know, things dying because it took so long to get into the garden, because not everything you plant at the end of the year. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, is all this work going to go for nothing? And at that point, the land that I was standing on, the garden, and I looked up in the sky and there were rain clouds coming. And I heard these voices and they were laughing. And I realized it was the land and the rain clouds, the weather, saying to me, did you think we'd put you to all that work and then freeze the garden? I had to laugh and I said, yeah, I didn't really think at all. I'm just trying to get it done. So we did not have a freeze. In fact, we had a very mild winter, so mild that I actually had to water off and on all winter long in Seattle, right? Rain country, because it was warm and drier and the garden thrived for a very long period of time. And a year later, my gift from the gardener was a coyote. Yes, as much as I love the plants and have learned to become a gardener, I like the animals even more. And so a wild coyote showed up out here 2 years in a row, and I learned more about coyotes than maybe most people know, just observing her, and then the following year, her pup and her, and my animal's reaction to looking out the window and seeing a coyote. And I asked, like, well, where did that coyote come from? And the Alki, the guardians of Alki, our resident fairies, said, this is our gift to you. We know how much you love the garden. We know how much work you did, but we know you like animals more. And so we brought you the coyote to entertain you and entertain the coyote. So that's a fun little story. But, you know, the lessons in that, the Duwamish clearing and the guardians of Alki were real lessons to me on how we can learn to cooperate with nature. And so as we go into spring here in the Northern Hemisphere, in winter, fall in the summer, fall in the Southern Hemisphere, you know, and we're looking at what are we facing? We're facing drought again here in Western, well, in the entire Washington state, officially dry the beginning of April, officially dry in March. Facing another season of wildfires, and they expect it to be pretty intense. We're looking at how we use our resources. We're thinking about things like Yellowstone being reseeded by wildfire, you know, and how much are we cooperating with nature and how much are we imposing our will on it? And there, we impose our will by building buildings, but we also impose our will by building gardens. And sometimes those things don't work. And how do we learn that difference? There was a time when I was hired by a business executive to evaluate property along Puget Sound, south of Seattle. And he wanted to buy this big estate. And it was a lot of land sloping down to the ocean and an old house. And I couldn't get a real good read on it. And I thought, well, I'm not really satisfied with this. I'm just curious. I want to go see the land. There was something I was seeing intuitively that I wanted to see in the land. So when I was there, the jagged, kind of a jagged line that I was seeing was actually a human-built water course for water running down off the hillside. It was built out of rocks and it was jagged off to the side. But what astonished me was that this property had a house on it that was decades old, was basically falling down from dry rot and mold, which nobody seemed to realize but me. But the big deal was it was not land that the resident fairies, guardians, were willing to give up. And they'd been putting up with humans on that land for a very long period of time. And they had so many problems, they had to create this huge pool that they would drain water from the hillside just to keep the land intact. And it was a lesson for me in reminding that when you're going out to buy a place, buy a new home, to build on property, to build a shopping center or a store, that we need to pay attention to what's really going on there in the land. What does the land need from us? What do we need from it? And can we live together in harmony or not? There are places where we shouldn't be building because it's not safe for us. And there are other places where we shouldn't be building because it's interfering with what the land needs for itself and what the guardians of the land, like the guardians of Alki, need to be doing for it. So as we think about intuitively creating our gardens, I'm challenging you to really let your intuition just free itself and just get your hands in the dirt, even if it's a pot for your house, even if it's a little deck, which is all I garden on these days, and be kind to itself, to it and to yourself, and ask yourself, what is it that I'd like to have as a house plant? You know, if you have animals like I do and a cat, that will eat anything. Pretty much you can't have anything but a huge jade tree that will go, get off of me or I'll shake and you'll fall off, which of course Raymond wouldn't do, but he gets annoyed sometimes at the cat. And yet she is very happy making a little nest in the dirt and just lying in the dirt and being surrounded by the tree. Fine, that's her way of connecting with nature, and actually Raymond the jade tree has gotten used to it and kind of misses her when she hasn't been hanging out with him very much. But what are we going to do? How can we use our intuition to create places that that celebrate our connection to the land? Gardens, wild spaces, leaving places like Yellowstone to go with the flow, so to speak. And how do we learn to appreciate that? How do we raise our children to respect nature as a sentient being and plants as sentient and creative and needing space to do the work that they came to do in that plant body? You know, everything has a soul. All those souls have a soul purpose, and that purpose is whatever that soul chose to do in that plant body. Maybe live a season, maybe live decades and years or centuries as a tree in Yosemite National Park, an ancient sequoia or redwood. But how can we support them? And then what do they give back to us? You know, I hope I make clear in this story that I went to a lot of work to create a garden, and the garden recognized that and sent me a coyote as a thank you. But it also was beautiful and did great for a number of years until I couldn't. That's another story in itself. But what are you going to do in your neighborhoods? Quit using pesticides. Quit using herbicides. Get rid of things like Roundup. They're killing us as well as our animals and our plants. What are we, can we do to support farmers to grow crops on healthy soil? How do we help them keep the soil healthy? What does that need? And why aren't they asking nature itself for what it needs to grow those crops? Because nature actually does know what it's doing, as I learned from the Guardians of Alki. And so as you're out there creating that, think about those things. Think about how you can create solutions in cooperation with nature that boost up nature instead of using water, which is a limited resource, pesticides and herbicides. Keep it clean, keep it healthy. Learn to connect with nature and understand the cycle of life, because it's real, it's there. It's just like our human and our animal families. Plants live, they die, they move on. Hesitate to destroy a plant just because you don't like it. I've had to remove plants from my deck garden because they just got too pot bound, and I always saw that they would get a home with somebody else, friends that have actual real gardens in yards, and lots of my plants have gone on to other places. So what can you do to support nature, which supports you, which supports the planet and everyone else around us? It's something to think about, but it's also something to have fun. So here in the United States, where it's spring or trying to be spring, we can walk around our neighborhoods and enjoy the leaves coming out on the trees and the bushes. And the right now, the tulips are trying to bloom. Other parts of the world are getting ready for fall and winter. Enjoy the seasons. Recognize the seasons. I think that's what the whole moon cycle things are about. The following the phases of the moon to help us keep track of time and the time that you live in and the time where you are. the planet needs us to take care of it in a way that keeps it healthy, just as we're trying to take care of our own bodies. We're not in control, but we can live in cooperation with nature. So I want to thank you for joining us today. My show is the first and third Mondays of the month. Join us here on those days. Join me at Facebook Live at the Humanity Healing page each Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. If you would like my services, I offer personal and business intuition, mediumship, animal communication, space clearing, land, buildings, peoples, homes, soul progression clearing, a way of clearing blockages and filling you up with healthy energy. Amazing process. One session has worked wonders for people. Past life regression to look at what our souls have done in the past, to heal and resolve trauma and tap skills from previous lifetimes. So call me, email me, connect with me through my website, robinfritz.com, or at Facebook at The Practical Intuitive. And now to close out the day, cross your hands over your heart, take a deep breath, close down that crown chakra that was connected to Fallon, the citrine Lemurian quartz. Feel yourself back in your body. Join me again. Let me know what you'd like me to cover in future shows. Thank you for joining me today. Take care and goodbye.